Tango Tango Papa 1857, August 20th, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from New Kingston, Pennsylvania. New Kingston is very close to, it's sort of in between Carlisle and Mechanicsburg, kind of in the, generally in the Harrisburg area. So anyway, busy day today. Let me think. Late last night, I unloaded at Westfield, Massachusetts, and then they sent, after I was able to park in a restaurant that was being remodeled that had truck parking, so I was able to park there, about 3 o'clock this morning, so I was able to park, and then they sent this load that picked up, it was just a short load, it picked up at Naugatuck, Connecticut, and then that delivered to this evening to Allentown, Pennsylvania. So then after that, they sent another load that picked up at Palmyra, Pennsylvania, which is right next door to Hershey, and that load delivers to Edwardsville, Illinois, which is a suburb of St. Louis. So hopefully that suburb isn't having the problems that Ferguson, Missouri is having, which is also another suburb of St. Louis. So anyway, I made it here, and I'm, you know, because it can be difficult to find a place to park after dark. Especially during the week and in this part of the country. And there seemed to be an awful lot of trucks out this evening, and so I just went ahead and didn't even try parking at any of the truck stops. Went ahead and just came to the company yard and was able to park, and so I'm hanging out here, and then leave here sometime in the morning and head towards Edwardsville, Illinois. So, speaking of Ferguson, of course, that's all, you know, I have just kind of been reading the headlines, and that's all, you know, I haven't really been trying to dig into the details. Because, quite frankly, a lot of the details that the media is publishing are twisted. They're publishing false stories. They're publishing a lot of things that are designed to inflame emotions. And it would appear that the policeman's original story is now been corroborated by at least 11 or 12 different witnesses that said that this so-called gentle giant of a quote-unquote kid was rushing the policeman. And so what's the policeman going to do? He's going to shoot. And, you know, they're trying to make it look like, well, it's, you know, the policeman just shot this poor innocent kid, quote-unquote kid, and, you know, and of course you've got all these people that have come in from out of town to do, you know, because it's, the media's there, and they don't care about the community, because a lot of the people in that community don't want this to be happening to their community, but doesn't matter. It's a good story. The news media will probably be there at least through the November elections, and then they'll leave. They'll be gone. But right now they're there to try to inflame as much emotion as they can, for the the election season right now. It's sort of the congressional election season, and so that's what they're trying to do, is inflame. And they don't care who dies or whatever else. It's just all about kind of pushing their cause. And I don't know if they think it's going to get them some ratings or not. Who cares? Quite frankly, I quit watching it. I can't watch it. In large part, there is no political solution. There really is no political solution. I don't know when people are going to tumble to this fact. There is no political solution to our problem. There are multiple problems. But it's a basic problem. The problem being that we, as a nation, as individuals and as a nation, have adopted what are really sort of faux morals. We have a sort of a faux morality. Sort of a, you could say it's a pseudo morality. For example, revolving around marriage, and the idea that it's really okay just to shack up, and that way you can sort of try each other out, and if you decide you don't like it, you just break up, and that's the end of it. And too bad if there's kids involved. The state will pick it up, is the idea. That seems to be the mentality. No big deal. Unwanted byproducts of sex, no big deal. And if it's really bad, we'll just abort it. We'll just get rid of the unwanted byproducts of sex. And, but it's okay. We can, we've decided that it's really okay to just shack up and, not go through the encumbrance, because it's just a legal thing. It's just a piece of paper, I hear people say. I've heard that all my life. It's just a piece of paper. What does that mean? And so that's a pseudo-morality. You hear people talk about pseudoscience. Well, there's an example of pseudo-morality. And that's one little example. There are plenty of others. And they all revolve around the destruction of the family, the destruction of the family unit. And whether you like it or not, there's sort of a God-given order that has to be followed. If you follow that order, then you're going to end up with a solid family unit. And the order is that the husband and the wife, you have to have a husband and a wife. They have to be married. And then you have the kids, and the father has to be in charge. As far as the father's got to be the moral leader. Now, of course, in most households, it ends up kind of being backwards, and that's especially true. You look in the black community, where they've deliberately destroyed as much of the black family as possible. Where the black men, instead of being real men and fathers, they're just sperm donors. And the state supports the women and encourages them to have as many kids as possible. And nobody loves the kids. And so, thus they end up stealing and, marauding and doing whatever because they have no meaning in their life, and they're looking for thrills. sort of looking for thrills in the place of finding real meaning. And so you end up with on earth as it is in hell. So I hope your living together is worth it. I hope your abortion, you know, and your enlightened way of thinking about abortion, I hope it's all worth it. I hope it's worth the dictatorship that you face. I hope it's worth the potential Islamic caliphate that could end up taking over. We have that too. This ISIS. There are millions of Christians now that are threatened in Iraq. And I was looking at the Drudge Report website a while ago, and there's an American journalist. You know, and there's a picture, and there's this guy that, you have the journalist there, and he's in some kind of robe, and he's got his hands behind him. Then you have this other bigger figure there that's got a black thing on his face, kind of dressed in black, and a black thing on his face with a knife. And it's, the headline is, American journalist gets beheaded. We're letting those, we have an open southern border now, and those, who knows what people are coming in. Plus this Ebola thing that's going on. And it has up to an 80 or 90% death rate. Starts out as the, flu symptoms, and then after a while, your organs fail. And there's no cure for it. So you get that, and you got probably maybe a 10 to 20% chance that you're going to live through it to tell the tale. And it's extremely, contagious. Extremely contagious. So there is no solution to this. So I would, we're not going to save the country. We're not going to save the system. That's over the hill. It's gone. We lost it. So the question is, are you right with your maker? Now, you may not believe that there is a maker, and you're free to believe that way. If you want to believe that way, fine. Believe whatever you want. But most of the people I encounter, that I talk to, most of those people do profess a belief in God. When I'm having a conversation with some of them, it inevitably comes around to, I'll say, well, I believe in God and so on and so forth, and they'll say, oh, I do too. So the question is, if you really believe in God, what does that mean? Because it should mean something to you. It's not just a passing thing, and you just something that you say. You say that you believe in God, but somehow you still it doesn't really make any difference to you. It doesn't make any difference to your existence. And people like that say, well, I'm going to believe in, it's a hedge, I'm going to go ahead and believe in God and so on and so forth, but you know, when it, but then they argue like they're atheists. And but somehow it doesn't mean anything to them. It doesn't mean anything to their existence. You know, and so essentially someone like that is an atheist. They just don't realize it. They're fooling themselves. Mention it once in a while. If you go to my website, truckertompodcast.com, up at the top there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link, and there are about 4 files that I have hosted on my website. You can listen to them or download them, burn them to CD, however, put them on your MP3 player, your phone, however you want to do it. And it's a very simple meditation technique. It'll teach you how to meditate. Now, if you know, I've had people tell me, "Well, I can't do that. I go to sleep or whatever." Well, have a good rest. But if you're serious, if you're really serious about, do you really want to know, is there a God or not? Are you serious about it? You know, because my entire life, I've had this desire that could never be quenched. I wanted to find, you know, and I can't explain why, you know, other than that's just the way that I was made, you know, kind of came out of the package, you know, came out as a package. I've always been looking. I've always been searching. And basically searching for God. And, you know, because I knew that there was more to this existence than what kind of met the eye and what the system around me and the people around me were telling me, you know, because nobody told them necessarily. So, and of course the school system, you know, tried to kind of... you know, put forth the idea that it was, you know, there is no God and so on and so forth. And it's, we're just all animals. And somehow we just kind of came to be some sort, somehow the dust that we're made of just, you know, it's weird, but it just somehow it became aware of itself. It's, you know, and they come up with all kinds of cockamamie reasoning as to how it happened. And they call it evolution, and they have this theory, and so on and so forth. And now they're trying to say it's fact, and, you know, it's typical. But the problem is, they're wrong. There is a God. Now, the question is, if you... have this desire to know, if you've had this desire to really know the truth, how do you set about finding the truth? You sort of, you know, you're on a quest. I was on a quest. I didn't put myself on the quest. It just sort of happened. And I kept looking and looking and looking until I found it. This meditation technique that's on my website, it's very simple. The idea is that you come out of your thought. The meditation technique will bring you, it teaches you how to sort of separate yourself, you as the human being, you as the point of awareness, separate your awareness, your point of awareness, from the thoughts that are sort of swirling around and around and around and around and around in your mind. You know, because it's always the same old thoughts that are going around and around. And so this meditation technique is very simple. You can learn, it will teach you how to sort of practice being in the moment and out of your thoughts. And in the moment is where God is. God is not in your thoughts. God is in the moment. But of course, we as human beings, we're guilty creatures. We're always trying to distract ourselves. And of course, we've got all kinds of distractions. Tons of distractions. We live our, most of us end up living our entire lives in distraction. And so, if you're really looking, give this a try. It can't hurt you. I can't promise it's going to help everybody, but I do believe it will help most people. It has the potential of helping most people. It can bring you to an objective state. You have to want to be in an objective state. And that's really the only way that you can find God. You're not going to find God in a church, necessarily. All you're going to find in a church is a bunch of emotion, maybe, and sing-song, and groupthink. Maybe you pay the preacher to do his little song and dance, and the really good ones end up on the radio. Or television. They have the radio and TV ministries. So that's on my website. Give it a try. And if you find that it helps you, then it's up to you to continue with it. But I can tell you this much. If you really, you get to the point, if you can, with me, it just sort of snuck up on me. All of a sudden, I realized one day that my anxiety was gone. And it's kind of a paradox, because even though there's still problems in the world and I'm still in the world, my identity is not being made by the world. So I'm in the world, but my identity is not of the world. It's a different source of identity. And so, I am absolutely at peace with my existence. Excuse me, I'm at peace with my Maker. And even though there's chaos going on all around, it's a paradox. Because I'm at peace. I have a peace that... really, it sort of passes, there's a phrase in the Bible, peace that passes all understanding. It's true. It really does. So I tell you this not because I want you to, I'm not trying to sell anything. I am simply trying to, want to put this out there because I know there are searching people like like I've been my entire life. I know there are searching people, and so therefore, if I run into a few, then I put that out there because it's definitely worked for me and it continues to work. And, if you're, you know, if you're one of those people, then here's your opportunity. Here's your opportunity to really understand, why am I here? Why do I exist? So, anyway, I have a piece of audio that Nancy sent me. So let's go ahead and listen to that. So here is Nancy.
Hey, Tom, I don't know if you remember, a whole lot of years ago, Barbara Mandrell was in a pretty serious car accident. This is about the Tracy Morgan accident. When Barbara Mandrell had her serious car accident that really messed up her back, the newspapers and all the media were all about how she sued the other driver. And what anybody who didn't live in that state didn't know is that under those states' laws, in order to collect on the insurance claim, I don't know whether it was something specific to that type of accident or because there were injuries, but they had to file a lawsuit in order to collect on the insurance. I had a similar experience. Well, my friend had a similar experience when we were growing up. Ohio had a similar law. I had two friends that were in a car accident, and in order for one of them to collect on on the insurance claim, they had to sue the other one, and it really caused a lot of problems between the parents because the parents were friends up to that point and they just didn't have any option. In order to collect on the insurance, they had to file the lawsuit. It's really unfortunate because the only winners out of that were the lawyers, because the loss of the friendship really had a value too.
Okay, so thank you, Nancy. Yeah, that's, you know, it depends. It kind of depends on the state, and, you know, I could see where if friends were involved, that would, you know, where they would end up having to sue, that could really cause problems with the friendship. Now, what she's, you know, she's kind of referring to the Tracy Morgan accident. Now, and I don't know exactly what the laws are in New Jersey where that happened. But I can, you know, my parents, of course, have been, you know, had, you know, they were hit, rear-ended, and it's been, I don't know, a couple of months ago now, when they were on their way from South Texas up to Arkansas for the summer, they got ended up getting rear-ended by this gal. And so far with that, you know, initially the other party's insurance company offered like 90%, you know, and they were going to try to get my parents to take on 10% of the responsibility, you know, of their own expenses, you know, as far as medical expenses. That's unacceptable. And so my parents, I don't know, they may end up having to sue. And they don't want to, but they will. If they have to, they will, because they were the ones that got hit in the rear. And if somebody hits you in the rear, then and especially if you know, you have all kinds of witnesses that they got hit in the rear, including a sheriff's deputy, then you know, you hit somebody in the rear, you are responsible, whether you like it or not. And so you hit somebody in the rear, then your insurance company is going to be liable for the whole thing. And so it's maybe at this point, it's sort of looking like my parents may have to end up suing. And if that's the case, they're willing to do it. And, you know, the result of that may end up being more severe for the insurance company in question than it would be if they just took responsibility and handled it. So, you know, I don't know exactly yet what's going to happen. These things can, you know, take up. I was talking to Mom this evening on the phone. She said that their insurance company said that these things could end up taking you know, a year and a half, 2 years before the thing was finally settled. So, it may be that the way the system is structured, that, you know, you do end up having to sue. So the Tracy Morgan thing, it's possible that he had to. He may have been in a situation where he had to. So I don't know. Excuse me. So anyway, thank you, Nancy, for the audio comment. So next I'm going to be reading Chapter 12 of Gravity Driven Universe. So if you think this is pseudoscience, then it's time to tune out. Tune back into your pseudo-morality. So let's see, what were we ready? Were we ready for... I'm going to have to go back now and check. I'm not exactly sure which chapter I was ready for. So I'm going to have to pause this and go back and check. So I'll be right back. All right, so I checked and we're ready for chapter 12. Now, again, you know, kind of like the reason... One of the primary reasons I do this podcast, I'm not trying to force anything on anybody. You listen to me at your own risk. You listen to me because you want to listen to me. You listen to me. No one has a gun to anybody's head making you listen. You're listening because you want to listen. And so I present what I present sort of in the spirit that it potentially can help you. If you're a searching person, it can help you. If you're not, you know, if you just want to listen, then fine, whatever. But all I'm really interested in is finding searching people. People that are really searching, you know, kind of this, in the same vein that I always have been. And that's all I really care about. And if I just find one other person, it's all been worth it. And I don't even necessarily need to know that that person exists. Maybe I find out about it. Chances are I don't. But in the end, I benefit from the process. And I've benefited greatly from the process of this podcast. So, Chapter 12... Unified Field Revisited. This is a quote from Michael Faraday, a physicist. Here end my trials for the present. The results are negative, but they do not shake my strong feelings of the relation between gravity and electricity, although they give no proof that it exists. And that's a quote from Michael Faraday. The song of creation is the most beautiful music. Everywhere, through endless variations, we recognize the theme of the composer from the beginning. In the beginning, before time began, before God spoke creation into being, there was his darkness on the face of the deep. And so, out of the breath of his spirit, a mighty wind arose, swirling out of the stillness. Some of the wind clumped and took form. The rest flowed on, becoming time to the created things of the wind. The wind moves, and yet it is still. It is no thing, yet it is many things. It is both time and timeless. and the wind is still blowing faster than we are going. It is a wind, and yet not a wind, and no thing, and yet everything. From nothing came something, from something came everything, and in everything was everything else. Out of the stillness came forth timeless motion, and out of this motion came swirling things. And time came into being as the motion passed over those things, becoming for them the wind of time. Out of the eternal came the infinite external. And so it was evening and morning of the first day. There was no solar light to fill the darkness, but in his wordless way he willed the light to be. And so the small gathered and swirled into the big, and into the swirling clouds the force of the wind came into the things of the wind, and it lit a star. And so shone the first light. And it came to pass that he made countless lights in the firmament, and these shining furnaces, the elements of our earth, were made. And from the earth's star dust, and from the light above, he brought forth life. And the earth he made rotates forever around the light he made for us, as does the universe around the dawn of creation. The wind of the Spirit still blows, and the creation knows not whence it came, nor whither it goes. The mystery of gravitation. There is much in nature that we take for granted, even though we live among unfathomable mysteries. Gravity is surely the most profound of these. It could well be the primal physical law of all creation. Surely for matter to exist at all, it has to hold together. And to hold together, primal energy, primal motion, must become gravity or gravity mass. How does this happen? The sudden expanding velocity of primal energy gives us our answer. In its steady state of acceleration, primal energy becomes gravity, creates weight, and at a critical moment converts to mass. The very moment mass exists, it defines a second form of gravity by occupying space and bending the lines of force around it. I've shown the two ways in which gravity is generated. The first is gravity by steady state acceleration, energy becoming mass, which builds the subatomic microcosm, the smallest of the small. The second gravity exists by virtue of mass occupying and distorting space-time. We derive our understanding of gravity mostly from large masses like planets and stars. Science tells us that mass possesses gravity, and this gravity bends time. In my view, this is not the case. In fact, it is time that produces gravity by wrapping around the mass. Thus, gravity is not a property of mass. It does not reside there. Rather, mass derives its gravity by curving these pre-time lines of force, time, around it, resulting in pressures against the mass, which we call gravity. The gravity well theory does not adequately explain the awesome pressures needed to ignite a star. Gravity, as I said, is the force residing in the surrounding field, transferring its spectacular power to the body's evolved relationship with its space-time field origin. Wherever a time distortion occurs, there a force enters the mass as gravity. Time distortion pressure. Physicists have not fully grasped the origin of gravity for the simple reason that they assume that gravity is an attribute of mass itself. Thus, in their view, how could gravity possibly pre-exist mass? But gravity in the form of steady-state acceleration, Einstein's equivalence principle, is actually the primal form of pressure which pre-exists mass and is responsible for the creation of primitive matter. Please note, this form of gravity is not the one that applies now to existing things. The moment mass exists, clotted out of its original pressure force, a second kind of gravity applies itself. The pre-creation force immediately surrounds and compresses on mass, manifesting as a push force gravity, as in the case of the push force of a stream on a rock. Remember, there are two principles at work here. One is steady state acceleration pressure, and the other is simply a steady pressure affecting mass, mass now bathed in the flow of its primal energy origin. The bending of this flow of pre-time energy around mass, like the stream around the rock, is what science identifies as time. Mass warps time. However, from my point of view, it is not only time, but time distortion pressure, and hence gravity. The gravitational field of subatomic particles is similar to that of true mass in this way. A super-accelerated pre-time energy from the metaphysical dimension is spun fast enough, it clumps into this dimension as a minute particles, as minute particles in time. The gravitational form of these particles is sustained by means of continued motion through the wind of pre-time force, from which they came, now time wind pressure. Thus, by apparent velocity of these original particles, they're spinning and dragging in the three-dimensional time wind, a distortion of space-time around each one occurs, producing an effect in the microcosm similar to that of a large mass. Consequently, none of these particles, pushed and regulated by the pre-time wind, can move slower than the speed of light. Their motion is certainly not of one of their own making. Visualize, if you will, a tiny primal particle made of compressed swirling wind, being spun like a top inwardly by the force of what becomes to it a time wind. Imagine the ergotron as a little dust devil, gathering form by way of its swirling motion and becoming a kind of primitive mass by its resistance to motion. Or think of it as an eddy in the water. The water motion makes the spin, and it is the spin. These two forms, the water motion and the eddy, one force, eventually becomes all the forms of creation. After the eddy is formed out of the water motion, it is the water's motion that keeps the eddy spinning. In a similar way, the ergotron gets its spinning form and keeps its form by way of the ever-flowing pre-time force. The spinning of the ergotron and its velocity through the space distorts space-time and becomes its sustaining gravity. Its spinning becomes the magnetic field around it, and in turn, the motion of this now magnetic particle becomes the electric field around it. The same order occurs with true mass: first gravitational, second magnetic, and last electric. Magnetic because it spins, and electric because it moves while spinning. A moving magnetic field always creates an electric field. Alignment of atoms causes planets to rotate. When a sufficient portion of the core of any mass becomes solid due to the pressure of gravity, atoms align, producing the almost perfect magnetic field. Collectively, en masse, the aligned atoms then tend to spin in the same general direction, causing the whole body to rotate, thus producing an electric field as it moves through the ether. If it were possible to stop the Earth and then leave it still in space, the Earth would once again start rotating all by itself. It would, however, be rotating by a power derived from its gravity-induced core alignment, which makes the Earth a perpetual motion generator. The Earth's iron core becomes a crystalline solid under compression, surrounded by iron in its molten state. The core spins in this thick soup faster than the Earth's surface, dragging the Earth around more slowly with it. A similar process with other elements causes other heavenly bodies, planets, moons, stars to rotate. Magnetic fields produce electric fields. Contrary to the traditional view of lightning, I believe that wherever a column of moist air possesses sufficient density and reaches high enough into the atmosphere, The ever-present electric charge surrounding our planet is conducted to ground as lightning bolts. It has been said that one such bolt has enough energy to light up a small city. Flying under the conditions that might produce a lightning storm, pilots see this electric charge stored in cloud formations manifest itself as a strange glow on the aircraft's wingtips and as fiery displays dancing across the windscreens known as St. Elmo's Fire. Tornadoes may in fact be caused not by conflicting hot and cold rising air currents of air, but by the arcing to Earth of one or more lightning bolts. That is to say, a steady, long-lasting lightning flash which causes a vacuum to be filled in by a swirling rush of air. It is likely that Nikola Tesla knew about this abundant energy source when he said he could deliver free energy to every home without wires. At the time, this claim was considered fantasy, but in the 21st century, it may at last become a reality. And so that was chapter 14. I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. So next time we'll be ready for chapter 13. So in any case, hope everyone is having a great week so far. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.